You're listening to Green Mountain Medicine, an original podcast series by ACP Vermont for all things internal medicine. I'm Haley.
And I'm Katie.
And we're your hosts.
This series aims to unpack the complexity of medicine in a nuanced and evidence-based way. We invite you to relax, grab some coffee, maybe some tea, maybe you're just a water person, and engage with us as we discuss the topics that impact our fields and characterize our practice.
Today, we are joined by a very special guest, Dr. Leanna Burgess. Katie and I actually happen to know Dr. Burgess pretty well. She is a renowned hospitalist at UVMMC, and she also was our course director for NMGI, Nutrition, Metabolism, and GI course that we took earlier this year. So without further ado, we're going to introduce Dr. Burgess.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the intro, Haley. Good to be here with you both.
And Dr. Burgess, tell us, where are you from?
I am originally from Vancouver, British Columbia, which is on the west coast of Canada, on the Pacific Ocean, just north of Seattle.
Awesome. That's great. I haven't been there, but I've seen photos and it looks so beautiful. So what, as Americans, since Katie and I are from the States, what should we know about Canadians?
Well, I feel like Vermonters know a lot more about Canada than maybe the average American, but some basics. We don't have states, we have provinces. So Canada is made up of 10 provinces and 3 territories. I think sometimes people don't know how big Canada is. So it's got about a tenth of the population of the US, but it's over 1.5 times the size of the United States. So it's a huge country, huge, beautiful, wild country. French is the co-official language of Canada. We spell a lot of things in the British way with the O-U, and obviously we pronounce some words differently. I think I've cut out a lot of my Canadianisms over the years after living in different parts of the world and in America. So I don't say A as much as I used to, but I've been told that my Canadian tell is really saying I pronounce it against instead of as, I guess, against might be what you would say.
Gotcha. This is good for us to know. I mean, especially being in Vermont right at the border. Okay, so we're kind of making an assumption here, but given that you have lived now in Vermont for a while and in Canada as well, you've lived in some places with kind of crazy weather conditions. So what season in Vermont is your favorite and why?
My favorite season, I think, is summer. I love summer. I love summer in Burlington. I feel like the whole city turns into a little beach town, and I love the concerts and all the outdoor events, but I like the seasonality of Vermont. So I really like summer, fall, and winter here. I am not a fan of the Vermont spring, which comes too late and doesn't really come at all, and it's just muddy and gross. So I miss the Pacific Northwest spring, but If I had to pick, I'd say summer.
Gotcha. Katie, how about you? What's your favorite season?
I'd say summer. I am not a winter person. I want to be. I thought living in Vermont for the past 8 years that I could convince myself that I am. But no, I'm with Dr. Burgess. I love the beach, as you can tell. Well, actually, you can't tell if you're listening to the podcast, but I have a beach in my background. So... yeah, I'm definitely a summer person. And then I'd say fall. I love fall in Vermont. So those are my favorite. Speaking of things to do in the summer, Dr. Burgess, what is your favorite hobby in the summer? Because it is your favorite season that's outside of medicine.
Yeah, I like to travel a lot, as you might know from just where I've done my training and what I've done before I came to Vermont. But that's harder and harder to do with full-time clinical work and a young family. So camping is definitely my favorite hobby. We do a lot of it in the summer. I'm actually missing a camping trip that we do every year to Burton Island this weekend because I'm 38 weeks pregnant and I don't want to go to camping on an island and go into labor while I'm over there. But
it would be a story to tell.
Yes. We did go to Green River Reservoir, which is another place we go every year, which is great. But I was 36 weeks, so I thought it was a safe call.
Yeah, that's smart. I was thinking that you were going to say that you skipped the camping trip to do our podcast, and then I would have felt guilty this whole time.
No, don't worry.
We'll blame it on the pregnancy. Well, that's really interesting. I love the idea of camping. I think it's like a great way to be outdoors and then also like spending time with all the people you love. So
it's the best way to get away from like the to-do list that is just always there.
Yeah, I agree. I love camping. And I think that might have been my favorite thing in Vermont last fall to do. Just such a great time. I went to a few places. I went on the Champlain Islands. I think it's called Grand Isle, to a campground there. And then I went to another campground that was like closer to Burlington. And then I also went all the way up to Lake Willoughby and did some primitive camping. That's like in the Northeast Kingdom. So that was a little extreme, but it was really fun. And also, you know, at UVM, we do Foundations of Clinical Sciences during our first year of fall semester, and it's pretty rigorous. So it was a good way for me to relax after exams, just get out in the wilderness.
Totally. Yeah. Vermont has really good parks.
Absolutely. So Dr. Burgess, we know you a bit and we know you had a pretty cool path to medicine and training. So we're wondering if you could fill the viewers in a little bit more about that.
Okay. I'll try and not be too convoluted with this because it wasn't the most direct path, but it is my 20th high school reunion this year. So it was a long time ago, but I'll do my best to walk you through kind of how I ended up here in Vermont and as a hospitalist. So I think in the idea of medicine really solidified for me in high school, in grade 12, we say in whatever senior year, I attended a seminar at one of the local research facilities. It was put on by BC Children's Hospital and the Children and Family Research Institute. And it was mini med school seminars, which were really directed to the public and high school students. Biology and chemistry and science in general was kind of my jam in high school. And so I heard about this opportunity. I went to all of the seminars. And then at the end, there was an opportunity to submit an essay to enter this opportunity for an internship, like a summer research internship. So I wrote an essay on the human genome, which was very cool and novel at the time. This was 2003. And I won the opportunity to join Dr. David Spirit's lab at the Children and Family Research Institute. And so Dr. David Spirit was my first mentor. He's a physician scientist. He has a background in pediatric infectious diseases and really specialized in cystic fibrosis. And so the summer between high school and undergrad, I spent the summer in Dr. Spirit's lab. And then I actually spent every summer there throughout undergrad doing research projects, applying for grants, submitting posters and things like that. So I met a lot of really great mentors in that setting and was also kind of exposed to a bunch of careers in health sciences. I went to the University of British Columbia for undergrad, which was 10 minutes from my house, and both my parents worked there, and I really didn't apply to any other university. I was kind of like, this is my option. And I studied microbiology and immunology there, which was a tough course to major in, but because I was involved in CF research, Burkholderia senosapacia was the bacteria I was studying. That's what I chose. Towards the end of undergrad, I wrote my MCAT, which went fine, I think. I don't think I was that savvy about what it took to really get into med school, but I wrote my MCAT. I went through the process of applying for med school. I didn't get in with my first round of applications. In Canada, there's one med school in province for British Columbia. So I applied to UBC and then a few others across Canada. So after that first cycle, I tried to rethink about what I wanted to do. I decided to take some time and try and beef up my application a little bit more. I ended up doing a volunteer trip to Japan. My mom is of Japanese descent, and I looked at it as an opportunity to like travel, experience Japanese culture. I volunteered at a Red Cross hospital. So kind of trying to take some time off, gain some experience, travel, enjoy some time. And then when I came back, I enrolled in a Master's of Biomedical Technology master's program at the University of Calgary. So After that, I applied again for another round of med school applications. You know, my master's of biomedical technology, I was really wondering if there were other fields in the health sciences that would be a good fit for me, you know, that were kind of more research oriented. But I worked with a lot of the local biotech companies in the Calgary area, and it just wasn't for me. It was like much more business oriented. I did not feel like a business person at all. I really wanted to be connected to patient care. So I applied again to med school. And this time I had a cousin who was going through school at the University of Queensland in Australia. So in addition to doing Canadian applications, I applied in Australia. And again, I was unsuccessful at the Canadian schools, but got accepted to University of Queensland. And I just decided that I wanted to take that opportunity. So I moved to Brisbane, Australia in 2010, and I completed the 4-year degree there. My partner and now my husband, he came with me to Australia, and he's American. So I ended up writing both my US boards and my Canadian boards. And at the end of 4 years, was intending on applying in both Canada and the US. Ultimately went through all the interviews in the US and was just so exhausted. And I didn't want to go through the Canadian application cycle again. So I interviewed mostly in the Northeast and ended up with interviews, and UVM was my top choice. I was lucky enough to match at UVM, and that's how I came to do residency here, and then have since stayed on as a chief resident and now as a hospitalist. Convoluted story, but...
No, that was great. Thanks so much for sharing. And also... that is so funny to hear that UVM was your number one choice for residency, because UVM was actually my number one choice for medical school. So it's quite the draw. And I'm glad that you ended up where you wanted to be. That's great.
I have so many questions. You seem like the perfect applicant. You have the research experience, you have the traveling experience internationally, you have that medical, the science background with your classes. Like, if anything, I'm shocked by Canada. I'm shocked.
Well, I wasn't that, I don't know how savvy I was. And like, I've had a lot of family members and people I've known that have kind of gone both ways, right? They just keep trying and trying and trying, and eventually it works out. And it sounds like it's similar experiences for med school applicants here. And I got to the point where I didn't really want to wait because I knew I wanted to do medicine. So
yeah. Can you just give some perspective on going to an international medical school? Can you tell us about how that experience was and what was going through your head when you were going to start medical school?
Yeah, I can only speak to my specific experience going to the University of Queensland in 2010. You know, I think things change and every school is different. But I was very set on coming back after going to medical school. I mean, I loved it there. I definitely would have been happy practicing in Australia, but just knowing how hard it would be to come back after training and having all of my family and my partner's family in North America, a lot of my focus was getting the best education I could there and then getting a residency spot in North America. So that was a lot of pressure and stress and, you know, totally self-driven. You know, there weren't faculty mentors who could tell you how to, you know, navigate both the CARM system and the ERAS system, which are the residency application systems in, you know, two different countries that are international from your medical school. I mean, there was a good peer kind of support group because there were other international students there. But overall, like, that was the big end goal. Having said that, like, medical school, I thoroughly enjoyed my 4 years there. Like, I loved med school. Part of it, I think, was just like feeling like I was on track and learning about the stuff I really wanted to learn that I knew I would use in my future career. Part of it was being in Australia. It was like a great experience to live somewhere else. And it was really nice to be able to do those things at the same time. Compared to like the Larner College of Medicine, which again is the only med school I know in the US, there were some similarities, a lot of differences, I think. So my med school was PBL based, not quite as much active learning as what LCOM does, but still kind of the active learning format, which I really liked, actually. It worked really well for me. I think some of the big differences are that I didn't have as much contact with clinical faculty. So all of our like small group facilitators, like none of them were clinicians. So we'd get lectures from faculty, but all of our small group facilitators were usually like grad students or people in basic sciences and things like that. I think there was more of a like rigid hierarchy. Again, this was 13 years ago now, but like definitely a lot more pimping on rounds and really rigid hierarchies, less faculty mentorship, less student support and guidance. But overall, I felt like I had a really good education. Actually taking care of patients, there were a lot of differences. If you wanted blood drawn, you wouldn't just put it into a electronic medical record. Either the interns or the med students would have to go and draw blood if you wanted blood drawn. So there were a lot of things that were just very different. And I think a lot of things were spoiled about here in terms of workflow and patient care and residency roles and things like that.
Yeah, that sounds really difficult. I feel like especially the part where you touched on mentorship about applying internationally for residency and having that go through your mind and knowing that you're not going to be staying in Australia, but needing to figure out, okay, because I feel like part of doing your medical school training at Larner is that you're making those connections while your clinical training.
Part of it is like the training after med school, the training pathways are just different in Australia. Like everyone does an intern year where, you know, you don't start in a residency, what we would call a residency here, right out of med school. So there isn't that need to like decide on a career option, like enter a training program right away. So a lot of that's deferred. Whereas because things are so streamlined here through, you know, undergraduate medical education to residency, you really need that kind of faculty mentorship up front.
Yeah. Well, on a lighter note, what was your favorite food that you tried while you were in Australia?
My favorite, I still love the snack. My favorite food there that I learned about was Vegemite avocado toast. So it's like a piece of toast with or without butter, thin spread of Vegemite, and then avocado on top. It's so good. And if I ever, whenever I have Vegemite in the house, I still enjoy it. And if you know Virginia Hood, who is a nephrologist at the University of Vermont Medical Center and also past ACP president, she didn't know, she's from Sydney, I think, and she didn't know about this snack, but I introduced her to it and she also loves it and approves. So approved from a real Australian.
Do you get Vegemite in the US or do
you can order it online? Yes. I don't have any in the house right now, but you can get it.
That's fantastic. What does it taste like? It looks like chocolate, right?
So it's very similar to Marmite. It's very salty. It's super salty. So most people's mistake is they put on like a peanut butter portion on a piece of bread. And it's really like a scraping of Vegemite that you need. It's made from like yeast, I think, and it's super high in B vitamins. Yeah, but it's also delicious.
I feel like you're testing our knowledge.
I'm processing it right now. I'm seeing the whole metabolic math in my head. But also, Katie, you called it. You called Vegemite. You were coming up with these questions. Katie called it that would be your favorite Australian food.
Yeah, we ate like the other things, that the very Australian things that we ate. We ate kangaroo meat, which wasn't my favorite. It was very gamey. I tried a crocodile pie and then I felt bad because there were crocodiles in the pie. But Vegemite was consistent and still a fave.
That's so fun. I love that. As a course director, can you speak on how maybe the teaching has been different other than active learning curriculum at Larner, just from that perspective?
Yeah, I think, I mean, active learning is a huge part of it, but I think just the exposure to clinical faculty at the preclinical level is the thing that really stands out in differences between the preclinical education at University of Queensland and ELCOM. Yeah, I don't remember ever, I had one, my physical exam teacher was a primary care doctor. And so she was the one consistent person we'd kind of have teaching us throughout our preclinical education. Other than that, most of our teaching came from non-clinical faculty. So I think that's the thing that stands out the most.
And so Katie had mentioned this, but given that you are our course director for NMGI, we're curious to hear what made you want to become a course director in the first place. Sounds like different kind of education styles in different countries that you've been in. So what made you want to be a course director at LCOM?
Well, first of all, I didn't quite know what I was getting myself into when I signed up to be a course director, but medical education, you know, when you think about like academic medicine, medical education has always been a natural passion for me. I did a lot of like peer tutoring through med school, before med school. In residency, I loved just case-based learning, both preparing for and participating in morning report sessions. And as chief, one of my primary roles was developing the resident education series. So once I came on faculty as an attending, the course director role was really a dream opportunity for me to kind of balance the clinical work that I did. And like I said, I didn't exactly know how it would be so different compared to the course directors I had in medical school, but it's been a great fit.
That's awesome to hear. And we love to have you as our course director. It sounds like you have quite the history with teaching. So what's your favorite part about teaching students?
I love the active learning format of teaching that I get to be a part of as a course director now. I've always loved like the physiology and the nitty gritty parts of medicine. And it's such a privilege to like come back to the classroom and be able to learn from my colleagues who are also teaching faculty and teach at the preclinical level. And it's really refreshing for me to toggle between kind of, you know, the realities and limitations of clinical work and revisiting the basic concepts that kind of form the bedrock of like medical practice. So I find it really refreshing to be able to come back to that, you know, when I spend most of the year in the clinical world. And I think being able to come back to the classroom with clinical experience is really satisfying because I can pull out, you know, how it's clinically relevant. And I find it really rewarding to be able to share that context with learners.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's from a learner's perspective, it's so valued to be able to hear the clinical significance of things. Like I just even remember we learned about like vitamin and nutrient deficiencies, and Dr. Burgess would always tie in like clinical vignettes and real things that she saw. Like I remember like about Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, for example, and a certain patient that you saw with that confabulation. So those things really stick with you, and we appreciate it, of course.
There's all these aha moments for me where I'm like, oh, that's why the biochemistry matters, which was totally over my head linearly. And then you get to see it clinically, and you just see, you know, alcohol use disorder and high lactates and Wernicke's a lot, and you're able to kind of bring it all back and remember the rationale for why you do some of these clinical things.
And I think I was always so impressed how, as a hospitalist, I'm sure you kind of need to know a little bit about everything, but for NMGI, you really knew so much in depth, and like, I guess like also we're part of our learning in so much depth about nutrition, metabolism, and GI. So I'm sure that really benefits you in a clinical perspective as well.
Yes, exactly. Like being able to take the time to dig deep instead of just being so busy with clinical work. I really like slowing down and getting back to the classroom.
Yeah, that's awesome.
One thing that I always appreciated about having you as a course director was just you would learn along with us. Like you would sit down and try and figure it out as well. And I always really admired that because I was like, oh, she has all of this experience and she's also still learning. So it kind of goes with that theme of, as you're a physician, you're continuously learning and that's the process, and you're allowed to forget and then relearn it again, you know?
Yes.
So
yes,
it was really the best part. You are hospitalist, but was there ever, while you were going through your medical education, were you thinking of other specialties, and what made you decide on internal medicine?
Yeah, I actually didn't really think about that many specialties when I was in med school. It was, you know, internal medicine seemed like a natural fit for me. Like I said, I liked everything I learned in med school. I loved learning physiology. And it seemed like internal medicine really provided the opportunity to continue that kind of broad scope of learning. I knew I didn't like the OR, so surgical specialties were out. I also, you know, from internal medicine, I knew that it was such a pluripotent specialty where you could like go into fellowship training. And, you know, once I was in residency, I considered like every single internal medicine fellowship. So, you know, after I selected internal medicine, it was really tricky, but choosing internal medicine over other things was pretty straightforward for me. However, I will say, like I said before, I felt like there were a lot of subspecialties and like mentors that I just were not exposed. I wasn't exposed to. Like, I never even thought about ENT or PM&R, and you know, there were some specialties that I just didn't even think about. But no regrets overall. Internal medicine, I think, is a good fit for me.
Yeah, that's really reassuring to hear, because I'm also thinking internal medicine as well. And I think what draws me to it is that it's so versatile that you can kind of go in any direction you want and you don't need to make a decision immediately. So right. If you know that you don't want to do surgery, then you're like, okay, I have all these other options.
It's a good specialty for people who like everything.
And so talking a little bit more about internal medicine, is there an area in internal medicine research that you feel needs more attention? And if so, why?
I think addiction medicine is something addiction in general is something we're seeing so much of. I've been a full-time hospitalist since 2018, I think. And just these last few years, the number of people that we care for with problems with addiction is just increasing and increasing and increasing. And so addiction medicine in general, I think needs more attention. And I think that's probably a national issue. And along with that, I think the other thing that I notice as a hospitalist that I think we could do better in is health services research, by which I mean like how patients access their healthcare and what are we doing differently when they come in the hospital. So as a hospitalist, I often see the same patients, you know, that live in the community with the same problems. And you keep doing the same thing so many times, you wonder, like, what could we be doing differently to stop this cycle? And a lot of it has to do with poor access to care in the outpatient community, fragmented care, receiving care in different health networks, even though in Vermont, we're pretty lucky that things are fairly centralized. But oftentimes, it feels like we could be doing things more efficiently. And the hospital isn't the right place for them, but it's kind of the end of the line. So they often end up in our care. So yeah, I think those are the two big things that have been themes over recent years.
And thank you for sharing. I definitely agree. And I think particularly for me personally, I'm very interested in addiction medicine and also internal medicine. But yeah, seeing the intersection between the both, I think, is really important. And even to hear you saying that there is an intersection is, I mean, even though it's obviously a very sad topic and unfortunate what the world has come to, I think it's really important that we acknowledge that.
And Dr. Burgess, how do you think that other medical professionals, other specialties could help make a hospitalist life easier just with your day-to-day work?
Yeah. I love being a hospitalist. And I think part of it is that I get to interact with so many other different medical professionals, both people on the interdisciplinary care team, you know, as the primary attending, taking care of a patient, physical therapists, occupational therapists, nurses. I like being part of a big operating team, and then also learning from and working with consultants. And I love learning, expanding the depth of my knowledge by learning from consultants. And obviously working at a tertiary care center, you're surrounded by all these smart people who have great ideas. And at UVM in particular, I feel like it's really easy to pick up the phone and feel like you're supported by your subspecialist colleagues. I think the thing that makes the biggest difference in patient care is really having a phone conversation or an in-person conversation about patient care. I think it's really easy to get stuck with just like communicating through the EMR, like the medical record, and a lot gets lost. And there are a lot of questions that I always have that don't get passed on. And, you know, especially on teaching teams, it's like the interns call the consults, who talk to the fellow, or the rotating resident who sees the patient and staffs with the attending. And then it gets written in a note, and there's all this indirect communication. So I'm one of those people, I'm one of the hospitalists that will always like stop every person, subspecialist that I know, and we compare lists and we're like, oh, who are you seeing on my team? And just taking the opportunity to have a phone conversation or an in-person conversation or a phone conversation I think makes a huge difference in patient care.
Yeah, I think that's totally a fair assessment. I even remember before medical school, I was a scribe in the emergency department. And there were so many times that I would just get the disposition of where the patient was going based off just reading a note. And then I'd come to find out, oh, that was just copy and pasted, like their template. And that's not actually where they're going. So yeah, I can totally see how just face-to-face or even just on the phone communication makes everyone's life easier.
Totally.
Well, that's it for all of our questions. If you have anything else that you'd like to share, the floor is yours. But we also just wanted to thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us.
Well, okay, I have one more Australian snack. The yogurt in Australia is unreal. We would have yogurt with like fruit on top, passion fruit or mango. And so I have to make a late entry for another favorite food that I had in Australia. And you can get something similar here. So Noosa yogurt is so good. And Noosa is like a little beach town that was just north of Brisbane. And so they make their yogurt Australian style, which is delicious.
I love Noosa yogurt, but I did not know the origins of it. So now it makes sense. Australian yogurt is just better, I guess.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much again, Dr. Burgess, and we'll catch everybody else next time.
All right, folks. If you're still here, thanks for sticking with us. That's it for today on Green Mountain Medicine. I'm Haley.
And I'm Katie.
And thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our discussion, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @ACP_Vermont for more podcast updates or subscribe to us on YouTube at Green Mountain Medicine.